Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Kevin Kinsey, a retired railroad conductor that spent 47 years on trains. At age 19, he started his first job on Southern. During his career, he relocated to the Valley to run the route from Strasburg to Harrisonburg, a railroad now abandoned. Laughers, I don't know about you, but with that much time on trains, I can only imagine the stories he can share with us today. And I can't wait to hear all about them. How about you? Thanks for coming on the show, Kevin. It's great to have you on today.
Well, thank you, Dawn. It's good to be here.
Yes, it is. We just had like this chance meeting at the Old Town Cidery, which is an outdoor hip tasting room in Winchester that your daughter Kelly works at. We interviewed her too on episode 30. She is great. As you know, the place is awesome. And I'm so glad that we met each other and we get to do an episode with you too.
Yes, she's very industrious. She's a good girl.
She is a good egg indeed. And I was so fascinated talking with you and finding out that you worked on the railroad for so long. And also, congratulations on your recent retirement, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm enjoying it.
I imagine that many years. Oh my gosh. What made you want to start working on the railroad at 19 years old?
Well, actually, I'd left high school and moved down to Raleigh, North Carolina with my first wife. And I was just looking for a career or work, something to do. Answered a newspaper ad. And the rest is history, I guess they would say. They hired me. And like I say, I stuck with it for 47 years.
Wow. I didn't realize you were married that young. So you had a wife.
Yeah, it was my first wife. Oh, yeah. Not Peggy.
That's good. Well, did you undergo any training then when you first started in that career? Or is this career more hands-on? How does it work?
There was not a lot of formal training per se, but at that time there were the crews consisted of four men on the job. And so we trained for 30 days, some school work, some, you know, in the field, rode some of the jobs, and then they would qualify you and what was called mark you up. And then you were available for work. But like I said, you were put with three experienced men when you would go in on the job. So you learned on the job mostly.
What are some of the things you learned in training? What is it comprised of?
Oh, just how to change out an air hose.
Okay. What is an air hose? Yeah, right.
Right. There's a lot of air hoses. Okay. And just how to be observant and watch your train. And because back in those days, there were cabooses, and you would ride the caboose. And if you had what was called a sticking brake, you could smell it because the wheel and the brake would start to overheat. So then you would tell the engineer to stop, and then you had to inspect your train to see if you could find what the problem was.
Wow. What were some of the worst case scenarios in that first training that they went over with you?
What they call a hot box. Those were where the bearings on the wheels would get hot. And then that could possibly ring off and cause a derailment.
Okay. Did you have any of those over 47 years?
I had a few, but not anything that drastic.
Okay. That's actually good. Is there a typical career path for a train crew to become a conductor? Because I imagine you didn't start a conductor. So
I started actually as a brakeman.
Okay.
I was hired as a brakeman. And that's what the full crew, you would have the engineer conductor and two brakemen.
Okay.
Usually one would ride the engines, one would ride on the cab. The brakeman would ride on the caboose.
Okay.
You sit and take a test as a brakeman to get promoted to conductor. Wow. So I was promoted in 87.
Okay. Is the test hard?
No, it's just a test about the rules.
Right.
Safety rules. We have a book that's like a thickness of an old phone book that has all the rules in it. And you just get tested on the rules and signals and things like that.
Okay. So you start as a brakeman and then you go to, did you go right to that conductor or was there a step in between that?
No. Yeah. You go right to conductor. You take the test, you get promoted.
Okay.
Is what it's called. You take the promotion and then it's a separate category.
Right.
How they would crew a train is they had what was called extra boards. And it's just a list of names. And there was a brakeman extra board, conductor extra board, and an engineer extra board. And if they needed to make up a crew, they would call the first people off each list.
Ah.
Come to work, you're going to be a crew. So you had to get along with everybody that worked there until you got a regular job. And then you would work with the same people every day.
Yeah, that's, I like their training system. Like make sure that they have people well experienced and
right.
mix them
well,
in.
That's a thing of the past because now there's just two man crews. Just
okay.
an engineer and a conductor. And right now, the guys, they're hired off the street. They do a little training and then they're immediately conductors.
That is, you know, I was planning to ask this question a little bit later, but I think this is a perfect time to ask it because you're already, you know, sharing with us some of the changes and you've been doing this for 47 years. So what have been some of the biggest changes over the years that you have seen from when you started, maybe even in the middle to right before you retired?
Well, computerization, it's affected every industry, made some things easier, some things more difficult. And it was just the carriers, the actual railroad themselves trying to reduce the size of the crews that brought about eliminating the caboose. They have what's called standby detectors that the trains go by and it will scan the wheels and tell you if one's hot, if one's not. Any dragging equipment, it detects all that where you don't need anybody on the rear of the train anymore. You just have a little ET, we call it, end of train device. And that was a big change because the crews went from 4 to 3 to 2 now.
Wow. When did we lose the cabooses? Do you remember what year that was or roughly?
Yeah, it was late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting that you would mention that, Kevin, because I have actually noticed that recently. I'm like, what happened to the cabooses? And I didn't really know what happened to them or why.
Well, that was it. It's the railroad trying to eliminate a job.
Wow.
To save money, I guess.
Yeah. So there must have been some friends you were working with that you may have, they went into other industries, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very fluid. You do have, you know, guys like me that seem to hang around forever. You know, they call us old heads. but yeah, yeah, there's been a lot of people come and gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very fascinated too. I don't, you know, other than admiring trains, I have no idea exactly what anybody does, whether from the 4-man crew that it used to be to the 2-person crews they are today. So what does a conductor do exactly? And how is that different than being a locomotive engineer?
Well, the engineer actually is the one who physically runs the train. They know the territory. They know, because some you have to know stopping distances and things like that, because you know it's not like your car where you can step on the brake and stop in a couple hundred feet. You have to plan your stop miles ahead of when you want to stop. and you have to know the terrain because sometimes the signals you're following are around a curve and you don't see them until you get right on top of them. So the engineer's job is, I think, more stressful than the conductor's job. Conductor is in charge of the train, though. It's his job to see that you get from point A to point B as safely as possible. But that's for through freights. Now, a local freight is like a delivery service. I had customers when I worked in a local out of Manassas. We wouldn't run any further than Marshall, which was 23, 24 miles out. But I had 20 to 25 customers along the way that I would stop and service, you know, deliver loads, pull empties. And, you know, that was basically it.
Yeah, I'm wondering, that's really funny you should say that the conductor's really in charge of the train, because I was reading online how there's actually some friendly banter between conductors and locomotive engineers on who really is in charge. So does that happen? Is that true?
I think the rule does state that we're equally responsible for it. But the engineer can't make a move until I tell him to.
Okay.
According to the rule. So if something happens and I have to get on the ground and check the train, he has to just stay there until I get back with him and say, okay, let's go.
Yeah. Those are both big jobs. I'm still kind of wrapping my head around how many miles does he have to know ahead of time, or she, when to like stop the train. Can you give us a relative distance when you say miles ahead? Is it a few miles or is it 10 miles?
Well, the signal systems, each signal is about 2 miles apart.
Okay.
And if you get a restrictive signal, which is telling you there's going to be a stop signal at your next signal, you have to start preparing to stop. You have to slow down. Slow down to 30 miles an hour or slower if necessary. So you're running by signals, but also by the terrain and how heavy your train is. You might be going downhill and have to use a lot of braking as opposed to going uphill where you don't have to use any braking at all.
Yeah. And it's the uphill and downhill, it seems like, reading some of the history about trains and trains in general, that is part of the reason why we don't have a ton, or did even have a ton of railways around our area because of the terrain. Do you know anything about that? Okay.
Well, yeah, it's the old Manassas Gap Railroad is from the Front Royal area into Manassas. And when they built that, it was prior to the Civil War, late 1700s. And they had to follow terrain because they didn't have the construction techniques that we have now. Mm. You know, they had to pretty much say, okay, follow the river line, you know, rather than trying to go straight through the mountains.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I actually, in my in-law's home, they have this old map of what the original plan and vision was for railways in the United States. And it's magnificent. If only that ended up being true, because that's incredible. And it sounds like the Civil War kind of pretty much is the impetus for kind of stopping the growth of the railway. Did I read that correctly?
It was actually, you know, Eisenhower after World War II concentrated on the interstate road systems rather than the railroads, where in Europe they did the opposite. They got the railroads back in order before they considered roads. So that's why there's, you know, like Europass in Europe, where you can jump on a train in one country and ride it, you know, basically anywhere.
Yeah, I wish we had done that.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, really do. Now, what year did you move to the Valley to work on the train route here to Winchester?
Well, we moved to Front Royal, I'd say 87 or 88. Now, let me think. Let me go back. maybe later, late 88. We moved to Winchester, March of 90.
Okay.
Because then Kelly was born March 29th, 1990. So when we moved in here, Peggy was almost 9 months pregnant. And so that's the easy thing to remember.
Yeah, that's a nice marker. Kids' birth years make nice markers in life, for sure.
The reason we moved to the Valley is because, like you said, I had that job that was running from Strasburg to Harrisonburg. That was an outlying point at that time. We were headquartered in, actually, Alexandria, Virginia to start, and then they moved to Manassas, and they're still in Manassas right now. But outlying points, you had to protect those jobs. If someone come up sick, then you would catch the job off that extra board I told you about.
Right.
And they would give you it's called a deadhead, which would be either a taxi or a bus ride to your outlying point, and you're required to stay there for a week and work it. And then after a week, if the regular man hadn't come back, you can ask for relief and go back home, and they would send someone else up there to work. But I got up in the Valley. I was living in Front Royal, and Peggy and my two sons were in Maryland still. And I just go home on Sundays.
Over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was working in Strasburg.
Right.
Living in Front Royal in the Quality Inn there. And the job went to work at 1:30 p.m. And then I'd get, back to the hotel and then go in once a week, and got off on Saturday and didn't have to be back to work till Monday. So I would drive home to Maryland and to be with my wife and the kids.
Yeah.
So we decided to pull up roots and move to Front Royal, so it'd be easier to work, from there to Strasburg.
That makes perfect sense. It doesn't sound like a very normal, or it doesn't sound like, I should say, a 9-to-5 kind of job.
No, it definitely is not.
No.
And you're going to miss every occasion.
Really?
Yes. Yes. You're going to miss birthdays, graduations, because 9 times out of 10, you'll be working.
So you're just kind of on call?
It's a lifestyle. It's not just a job. It's a lifestyle.
What did you enjoy? I'm not sure. I'm not going to assume. I would think you may not like that part of it.
No, that's the worst part of it.
Yeah.
There was some freedom.
Yeah.
You're operating on your own wits. You don't have someone constantly over your shoulder. As long as you got the job done, the middle management really didn't care,
So you had a lot of autonomy and enjoyed that part of the job. What was your favorite part of that work? Because you had to like it a little bit to do it for 47 years. So what did you enjoy the most about it?
It ruins you, but you're not good for anything else. There were some wild and woolly days back in the early 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
There was a lot of freedom there. So you could be away from home for a week.
Right. And wild and woolly, what does that mean to you? Or do you want to?
I don't want to elaborate.
That's fair. Let's
just say railroad men have a reputation.
Okay. I see. I learn things every day. Thank you, Kevin. I didn't know. So you're my first railroad conductor or railroad staff or crew, train crew, whatever I've ever met.
A dwindling occupation, I'm sorry to say.
What do you think's the future of trains? Do you think it's going to be all automated?
A lot of it is automated now. A lot of it, and the companies are desperate to make it work. So they insist you use it, even though you may be losing time on your run, mm-hmm. letting the computer run the train. Because it's, you know, the man that's sitting in that seat can run it 10 times better than the computer can. But they want to prove that the computer can do this.
Wow. It's a changing industry.
Right. And then, and there's a big push now to get down to one man crew, just an engineer in the cab.
Wow.
All by himself, which, I mean, part of my job too is we have what's called, you know, speed restrictions, and there are speed limits. Like we have speed limits through some towns. For instance, Culpeper is 25 miles an hour. Excuse me. And I just, you know, I'm observing how the engineer is running the train, and I may, you know, say, hey, don't forget, we have that slow order is what we're calling, you know, a mile ahead. And then he would acknowledge that. So it's not just, I'm not really doing anything to run the train, but I'm not just sitting there either.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I would think you'd want at least two in case something horrific happened, but.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of my responses is something happens and the train stops. I have to get down and figure out what went wrong and if I can do a field repair or if we have to call the truck to come out. Now, they get down to a one man crew. If something happens, he can't leave the engine. Mm-mm. So he just has to sit and wait for someone to catch up to him and, find out what was why.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that they keep it to at least two.
we're praying.
Yeah. Let's hope for that. Let's talk a little bit more about your route from Strasburg to Harrisonburg that brought you here to the Valley. What you mentioned a little bit about what was what that route was about, but what specifically did you transport?
Well, primarily there were quite a few at that time. Like I said, this was '80s, late '80s, early '90s. There were quite a lot of little mom and pop feed mills along the route. I remember one right outside of Timberville that at one time was owned by Holly Farms, because there were a lot of poultry farmers in the valley. So they would drive in and buy their chicken or turkey feed from these mills. And we would deliver carloads of the raw materials, corn, rye, wheat, and then they would mix their own feed for these farmers.
Right.
So that was it. Like I'd leave Strasburg, excuse me, you know, maybe 25 cars, more than half of them wheat and corn to be delivered to these places. And then when you get to Harrisonburg, you turn around and then come back, and I would pull all the empties on the return trip.
Okay. So not people, really. More.
No.
No. Okay.
No, there's no passengers trains.
There's no. Just freight.
Other than Amtrak. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Why was it abandoned?
The railroad deemed it was too expensive to keep it. It didn't have enough business left. It wasn't paying for itself.
Mm. So the people that get their products picked up or dropped off, they're paying a fee at the stop. Is that how that works?
Yeah, they have a certain rate per car.
Oh, okay. All right. I see how that works now. I don't know anything about freight trains, so this is really great. I'm learning so much. I would also wanted to ask you, you mentioned when we set up a time for this interview that people that are into trains often would be in the same spots along the route to take pictures. Can you share some of those stories with us?
Yeah, it's just that you'd see them not every day, but sometimes more than once a week. Saturdays were a popular photo op, I guess. But they love trains. I guess. I don't know. I'm not a stand where I'm going to sit there and wait for a train to come by just to take a picture of it.
All right.
But we do have, we had, and especially up in the valley, we had people that would like flash their porch light at us every night when we went by them, you know, just decide to wave, you know, say hi.
Yeah.
And in a few places, and there was one occasion, and I can't remember where it was exactly, but they'd set up a little Christmas tree right next to the tracks, and their driveway crossed the tracks right there. And so my engineer at that time, he stopped on the way in and bought a little Christmas cake. And when we pulled up, we stopped there. He got down and went, but nobody was home. So he left it on the hood of the car. And then 2 days later, somebody sent me a clipping from the newspaper saying that the train had stopped and gave this people a Christmas cake.
That's kind of great.
I don't know where that clipping is. We've moved twice since then, but that was fun. There were a lot of people that didn't hate the train going by their house every night.
Yeah, that's really, they got just made it part of their life experience. Did you toot the horn
when
That's so great.
We would toot and, you know, we would wave if they were standing there.
Oh, that's really awesome. Did that happen your entire career over 47 years, or did you see any kind of decline in people doing that recently?
No, the same people would.
Yeah.
But I guess they got older as I was getting older.
They're old heads now too, huh?
So now okay. It's their kids or the houses were sold, you know.
That's really fun. I love that they were loving on you guys coming through. That's really great. Yeah.
Yeah, it was heartening. You know, you think that you were bothering everybody, you know, going through town at 2 a.m. But, you know, this was some people showing us that they, you know, appreciated us.
Ah, people. I love people. By the way, speaking of which, that was so great of you to send some information ahead of this interview to me, some links about railways and our neck of the woods. And I loved and enjoyed reading about the Chesapeake Western Railway that came through the valley, of course, primarily carrying agricultural products around Harrisonburg. And they referred to it as the Crooked and Weedy. That was really fun. I believe Bluestone Vineyard has a wine named that for that very reason.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's some abandoned railway rails around their property too, if I'm not mistaken. So if you're around here in Harrisonburg or come to visit us around here, you should check Bluestone Vineyards out for sure. Well, as we wrap up here, can you share with the laughers some ideas and recommendations of how they can maybe look up some train history in our area or keywords to Google?
I just Googled. Actually, that was the articles I sent you was just something I had Googled because I really had no, you know, other than my knowledge of the place. I didn't know the real history of the lines. So it's just, Google Norfolk Southern, Southern Railway. And I think I Googled railroad in the Shenandoah Valley, and that was a very informative article.
I think so, too. That had the most information directly associated to where we are here in the valley. That was good. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, laughers, we'll be sure to put that information in the show notes for you as well. Thank you so much, Kevin. This has been super fascinating and fun. Thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing some of your stories on all things about trains today.
All right. Well, thank you, Dawn. I appreciate it. And I'm happy you gave me an opportunity, though we really didn't get into that much.
Sometimes it's okay to plead the fifth.
Right.
That's right.
Maybe we do a follow-up.
Yeah, maybe a follow-up, you know, one of those inside the or behind the scenes look at the life on the railroad. That'll be great. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.